Hi, this is Ernie Hudson of Winston Zeddemore from Ghostbusters. When something's weird and it don't look good, who are you going to call?
W-F-O-D!
Well, keep on busting.
Who is W-F-O-D-I-C-K-S?
Wheelbarrow full of dicks. You don't know those guys?
Well, I wasn't going to say it. I wanted you to say it.
I get super jealous of Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Dude, shout out to a wheelbarrow full of dicks.
I just wish you every
day. WFO dicks. That does sound suggestive.
You are now listening to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program.
Right on a
head on.
Oh, no.
Not 80s clothes.
If I'm wasting our time, I get this all like from nothing.
Elbows, hey. Like if you don't finish sucking my dick, you can't watch Power Rangers.
Oh, I'm on my
reason. Dick blood!
WFOD starts now.
Who has my liver? Who has it?
To the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, my good friend, Mr. Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Gloria.
Can't yet. It's only the first period.
That's fine.
Guys, we're also joined by Coach T, the king of pranks, the albino alligator, popcorn bitch.
I like Coach T.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Mr. Travis Hulse is here. Hello. Hello,
hey,
Travis.
Hey, good evening.
Guys, phone number to contact the show, 636-487-HAND, or WFOD show on Skype. Oh, boy, do we have a show for you.
Boy, oh, boy.
Travis, there is so much to discuss, Travis. There's a lot going on in the world, and we're here, Travis. We're here every damn week to talk about it. You know what I mean?
Rain or shine.
Oh, Travis, there was Nader sirens going off, and we was scared.
Did you go to the basement?
Well, yeah, I mean, we did. But Travis, you know the people in the St. Louis area, I don't think they take these. I think that we need a good Nader to smarten these folks up. Because the people around here,
I don't think so. We do what we do.
They don't give a shit about the Naders. They see them coming and they say, "Eh,
maybe they should, have a showing of Twister on a big inflatable screen downtown."
Well, it's funny too because in St. Louis, you know, most people hear tornado sirens, they go down to the basement. In St. Louis, you go to your front porch
to watch.
Yeah.
Ooh, which way is it coming from?
The lightning looks cool, doesn't it, Doris?
Hey, it's green outside. What do you think that means?
I have to say that I'm guilty of that same thing. Even though I do take them very seriously and I will like get my family to safety when I hear these things, I have a hard time not standing out on my deck watching the green sky and the trees like look like they're going to snap in half. It's amazing to me.
All the people in the movies, Travis, they have big holes in their backyards with doors.
Oh, the cellar doors, the old school cellar doors.
Yeah, we don't have big holes in our backyards with doors. Maybe we need to get some.
They really need to retire that trope in movie. Like, I understand that there are still homes where that exists, but I know typically around here too, like old farmhouses and shit, those are like boarded shut. Like you can access those cellars from the inside of your house, so there's no reason to ever actually use those big hole in the ground doors.
Travis, didn't come here to tell you about Naders. I wanted to talk about the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Did you hear that they're canceling Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Did you even know that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was still on?
The last time I saw that it existed was that that gal from, was she from The View or something, was hosting
Meredith
it?
Vieira.
Yeah, she. That's the last I knew of its existence.
It was like four hosts.
I was about to say, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think they had Terry Crews and Cedric the Entertainer both doing it now. And now it's just some jabroni from The Bachelor.
What was the time slot on this show, that if it's still on?
I don't even think it's on network television.
It was,
I think
like
it's moved
in the afternoon, too.
Yeah, it's like moved to CNBC or something. But the article that I read prefaced the whole thing by saying, you know, it's probably because there was a study done, and people don't think that $1 million is that much money anymore, and that you're not rich if you have $1 million anymore. Trevor, have you ever watched a game show based on the denomination being offered? It wasn't worth watching unless it was $1 million.
Family Feud's still $20K, and that's split up between five people.
Yeah, I just say like still like the $10,000 pyramid or something. Like
I think it's $25,000, but still.
The record on Wheel of Fortune, the most won ever on Wheel of Fortune, was $91,000. Like that's the most you've ever won.
I feel like the only reason that that millionaire is probably going away is people got sick of a trivia show, right? Because that's essentially, it's a glorified trivia show. Whereas like the Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy and thing, I guess Jeopardy is too, but there's like strategy involved kind of with that. It's like, if you don't know the answer in Millionaire, you just don't know the answer. Right?
But I mean, like if you were a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire watcher, you'd watch it if it was Who Wants to Win $10, wouldn't you? Because you want to see if you know the trivia questions that the guy missed. That's the only
absolutely.
Reason.
Have you guys ever played like the Deal or No Deal arcade game?
Yes.
Yeah,
like there's no reason to be playing that except, you know, I mean, it's all prefigured into this little video game cabinet, but I play the shit out of that. It's I don't win anything but tickets, and I don't give a shit about the tickets.
Right. You want to get a good deal and be like, yeah, I beat you, banker.
Yeah,
Travis is an avid fan of Dave and Buster's. He needs to he needs to get all 75 of those tickets.
Hey guys, I spend a lot of time in places that give tickets. I have two young children, so any vacation that we take as a family always ends up in some kind of ticket arcade. So
you
that's like my bastion of hope.
Banker trying to buy my case. My case is the one that has the million in it.
You're trying to give me 12 tickets? Fuck you, buddy.
I could have gone to this other machine and got 25 just for playing. Fuck you.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, just for pushing that stupid button with that where the ball falls out and falls into a hole. Come on.
But guys, I mean, who wants to be a millionaire? I do. Like, I still think $1 million is a lot of money, and I'll take it.
Right.
Give me a million.
I'm retiring
dollars.
On it, but yeah.
Give me a half $1 million. Well, I will change
that's essentially
jobs.
What you're getting anyway. But
I can't like quit working, but I will. Change career choices. Like I'll go work somewhere where I don't have to stress out about anything.
Right.
If I had a half million,
I play that HQ trivia every night, Travis, because it's fun. And I think everyone who wins shares $5,000. But you know, it's fun, and so I don't care. And if they want to invite me to be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and like they don't want to give me $1 million, they want to give me like $100. I'll still play. Because answering trivia questions to win $100 is pretty easy money.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Put me in Cash Cab. I'll take that like $200.
Oh, dude, Cash Cab is the fucking noise.
Is Cash Cab just like $200?
It depends.
You can get what, a grand?
Travis, maybe that's what we need to do. We need to do a game show podcast.
I've seen somebody win like $3,000-$4,000 on it.
Where the grand prize is $10.
Do you think that we could crowdfund an independent game show where the only thing we're crowdfunding for is the prize money?
That'd be tricky.
What if we did? Yeah. Travis, what if there was like a game show where you just find folks on GoFundMe who are trying to raise like $2,000 to go on vacation or to put a new roof on their house or something. And you'd be like, how bad do you want this $2,000? And that's the game show. And you make them do silly stuff like
Fear Factor.
Yeah. But it'll be based on crowdfunding.
And it'll only be up to the amount that they asked for in their GoFundMe campaign.
I was
campaign.
About to say, Fear Factor is like nothing, too. Ain't it only like $10,000?
It's probably not much.
It's
not
much. Yeah, so, I mean, if you've been asking for the premise I was saying.
$10,000 is a lot of money.
Right.
I'll go on a game show and
you got to do some crazy shit for that $10,000, whereas on millionaire, all you're doing is answering questions.
Right.
Right. So what we're doing here is, even if you've been, even if you've had the same GoFundMe up for years asking for just like $1,000 to do something, we're going to make you do ridiculous shit, just like we're going to make the person asking for $5,000 do ridiculous shit.
Right. Be like, okay, this is your crowdfunding campaign. It's been up for 4 years. You're trying to raise $1,000.
Right. Like you're trying to get a plane ticket or something.
Right. You'd be like, okay, guy who wants $1,000. This is what you got to do. You got to
cut your dick off.
No, no, Travis, that's crazy, Travis. We're talking like like a silly thing that like
too extreme.
We can make people do. We can laugh at them. Like
yeah,
like,
but you yeah. Like,
what was that? All the social game media that everybody had to jump on the big red balls, Travis.
Yeah, this is a social media game show too. So we have you do these things, and then we post them to our Instagram account.
That was a wipeout that you're thinking of.
A wipeout. Yeah, yeah. Do dumb stuff like that. And, yeah, and
the dumb shit videos that you send us, if it gets the most hearts on Instagram, that's the person who gets the GoFundMe money.
Wipeout was basically comedic ninja warrior, though. It was really what that was.
And I think that you should do your pitch for your GoFundMe, and maybe other people will donate because they're enjoying watching you just do silly stuff.
I ain't gonna lie to you.
And then we won't have to pay as much.
This game show sounds a lot like Repo Wars. You remember that game? That game was awesome.
What, like they go to put your car on a tow? And
you had
like,
to answer three questions. And if you got three of them right, then...
you got to keep your car?
Keep your car.
Yeah, and you can keep your car if you do a handstand.
And if you got three strikes, then they... towed your car and you had to pay your shit.
Guys, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to Cody Merrick. He's a documentary filmmaker. He made a movie about the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series. Drunky, you read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
I don't like scary anything.
You don't like them?
Nope. I don't like scary stories. I don't like scary movies. I don't like scary rides. I don't like scary anything.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the book series, and actually was a big fan of this documentary, so I'm excited to talk to
Goosebumps was okay, I guess. But those weren't really that scary.
There's so many of them, too. We actually just watched the sequel, the movie with Jack Black, Goosebumps 2, this weekend. And, yeah, I mean, there are horror elements in it, but really, yeah, the Goosebumps were never scary. You had to get to the next series of books written by R.L. Stein, the Fear Street series, before it was actually going to get scary.
They were more adult-themed, Travis.
Yeah, it was there were actual consequences to what was happening in the Fear Street books.
Yeah, I read both, Travis. I read the Fear Street and I read the Goosebumps, and my teachers, they saw a lot of promise in me because I was reading at such a high level.
Look what happened.
then they tested me to go to the Smart Kid Club, and I failed, and so I didn't get to go to the Smart Kid Club. But I told that story all the time.
They were like, "Fuck this! I'm gonna stop reading."
Yeah. Hey, it was a pleasure just to be nominated.
The Smart Kids they went on a bus and they went to like a special place at the end of the day, and I would always walk by them, and I said, I could have been. Could have been.
Do you think the special place that they bust those kids to was just like a field to pick cucumbers or something? It's like, oh, they don't need any more schooling. They're doing really well. Let's go make them do manual labor.
Yeah,
for a couple
count
hours.
Them. Tell me how many there were. Because you're gifted.
How many cucumbers did you pick today?
Travis, I
like cucumbers, by the way.
I saw that the craft people are making hybrid condiments. Did you see that they're doing like a...
Yeah, I saw that a couple days ago.
Cranch.
Nev Campbell and Firuza Balk?
What?
Nev Campbell and Firuza Balk?
What is he talking about?
Nev Campbell was hot back in the day.
The Kraft?
No, Kraft, the condiment brand.
Oh.
They're making Cranch.
You know, like Mr. Patriot.
Oh, the mac and cheese people.
Yeah, what they're doing is
or the ranch people.
They're taking some ketchup. And
hey,
some,
if you ain't Hidden Valley, you ain't ranch.
And some ranch. And they're putting them in the same bottle and shaking it up. And they're selling
only one that should do that.
Isn't Hidden Valley a bit runny?
No, fuck no. Hidden Valley's that's the jam. If you eat ranch, you better be eating Hidden Valley.
What about homemade ranch?
Well, I mean, if you come on.
I guess if you're making homemade ranch, then you can probably make some cranch too.
Right.
I guess this is a product.
Ketchup and ranch together sounds disgusting to me.
It's a product of really convenience, close. Is what it is.
Is that what? Didn't they do that? Didn't Heinz do that with the what was the? Wasn't it a mayo and ketchup mixture?
What would you call that?
Well, that's called Thousand Island.
Well, yeah, of course. But
Machup, Travis?
It had a name. I'll look it up.
Ketchinaise?
Ketchinaise. I don't really like mayo either. I'm more of a Miracle Whip guy myself, but I don't really eat do either.
Miracle Whip is
Whip.
Whip
mayo
cream.
Chup.
You're talking it's about a. That's mayo Cool Chup. Whip. No, you're right. I'm wrong, Drunk.
Yeah.
You're right and I'm wrong. Miracle
Whip. Oh, I love Cool Whip on a burger.
Miracle Whip is, if you get in the generic, it's just called salad dressing.
Yeah. But yeah, you don't put a Miracle Whip on a salad. That is nonsense. So right. To call it that is stupid.
It's more like a coleslaw base than a salad dressing. So
that's what you use if you're making like a tuna salad, right? You know, it's some Miracle Whip, some dill. You got a little dill in there.
Travis, were you looking something up or did you abandon that?
No, it's mayo chup.
Mayo chup?
Yeah, mayo chup.
That's what I said.
But yeah, weren't they also doing like a barbecue hybrid too? Is it going to be a barbecue and something, the Kraft people?
They're fools, Kraft.
Well, the only people who should be doing this is Arby's. Because if you enjoy the Arby's and you haven't mixed ketchup and horsey sauce, you're really missing out on the best fried dip that you've ever had.
Travis, I'll tell you what, if Arby's gets into the condiment business, Arby's used to put red ranch sauce on their beef and cheddars, Travis. And now they only put it on their bacon, beef, and cheddars. You have to go bacon to get the red ranch. I think that's their only product that still has the red ranch.
But Sons of bitches.
You can ask them for a cup of red ranch and they'll give it to you.
I don't understand. Well, and that's nice, though, that they'll give you a cup of it, because there was my favorite thing like 15 years ago, and I didn't do this often, but like McDonald's. And I didn't know that it was like a secret thing because it's not on their menu. They didn't have it in like a bowl when you went in there. But this gal I was dating, she introduced me to the hot mustard packets. They come in the little the little tub kind of packet things where you tear the foil top off and it's like a dipping bowl. But it was hot mustard at McDonald's, and you had to request it. It was great for chicken nuggets and their fries. And the last time I asked for it, you're probably talking a year, year and a half ago. The person at the, I said, hey, do you guys still have the hot mustard packets? And they said, what? No, we have honey mustard. So I don't know. It went the way of the dodo. It doesn't exist anymore.
The salad dressing, there's a salad dressing. I forget. It starts with a C, but I can't remember what it is. It's similar to the red ranch, but I've never quite gotten the right dressing.
So Kraft Heinz is doing Cranch, Mayo Q, and Mayo Must.
So Mayo Must is mayonnaise and mustard?
Correct.
Oh, so Kraft and Heinz are the same company. So they're just rolling out more of the line. It's like a line extension from the Mayo Chup. The Mayo Chup's been around for a while now.
Yeah. So yeah, Heinz and Kraft are...
Mayo Q is a combination of
sister company.
Mayonnaise and barbecue sauce?
Yes.
So it's probably like a pinkish color?
It's tan. Yeah. It's like tan. Yeah. The pinkish one is the Mayo Chup. That's got a little more pink to it, but... you got tan in the Mayo Q, and then the Mayo Must obviously is a yellow.
Travis,
here's the bottle color.
I can't imagine. There might be things that you enjoy using these items with, but there's no way that you're going to use these enough to warrant having them take up space in your refrigerator door.
So I feel like they should make one that's ketchup and mustard and just call it little kid.
McDonald's hamburger.
I'd eat the shit out of that because I mix my ketchup and mustard to this day. So,
but I mean, yeah, but there's times you want ketchup and there's times you want mustard. So to carry all three seems overkill. It Fair. Seems like a lot.
Yeah. Got a lot of, I got two refrigerators in my
upstairs. That's true. Mike. But not a lot of people.
Oh, that's. That's true. I guess if I had a second refrigerator, I'd probably buy some mayo chips.
This product, Travis, it's intended for people like Drunk. Drunk's got room to spare in that second fridge, and he needs some hybrids.
Hi, I'm Roger Hines. Is a bottle of ketchup and a bottle of mustard not enough for you? do you have a second refrigerator in your kitchen? Well, I have the product for you.
Travis, I mean, the real reason for the season, the reason that we're all here, Travis, of course, we're going to be talking to Cody Merrick here in a minute, but I had something that I needed to talk to you about, Travis.
Well, oh, sure. Yeah, I'm all ears.
Because Matt needed the night off.
Oh, Travis. Matt, he talked a big game all week, Travis. He's saying, I'm getting my wisdom teeth taken out at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, and I will be in my seat ready to do the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program at 8. And boy, he crumbled like a sack of leaves.
Hey, he still, even like at 1 p.m. today, was still talking a pretty, like, oh, I'll be there. Can't wait to talk to you guys. And then
he sent us
quickly dawned on him after
a picture
a
of his removed teeth. And I said, oh, look, I can use that for album art. And I got the little eyedropper tool, and I matched the WFOD letters to the color of Matt's blood.
Those were
Travis.
Some big old choppers, boy.
You obviously can't use that picture.
Just root and all. It was so disgusting.
You guys shamed me. So now I have to come up with something else.
It's so gross. Like, to see it was one thing, to be like, holy shit. And first of all, did he must have requested, can you hold those out so I can take a picture?
Right.
I need them for the gram.
Yeah. But like, second of all, I can glance at it once and being like, oh, that's kind of gross. Look at your teeth there. But for you to actually like post that as album art for the podcast and be like, hey, listeners, take a look at this disgusting thing while you're listening
Travis,
to us on your phone.
The dickheads, they're not squeamish. They can handle it. Travis, I wanted to talk to you about 1995. Travis, do you remember 1995?
Yeah, I was 15. Good year.
Oh, Travis, in 1995.
He was already drinking beer and doing blow.
Alanis Morissette, she put out a song called You Oughta Know, Travis. Have you heard the song?
Oh, it's about Dave Coulier.
It is.
Yeah, Dave Coulier cut it out.
Cut it out.
The lyrics, Travis, are, it was a slap in the face. How quickly I was replaced. And are you thinking of me when you fuck her?
It was a slap in the face. How quickly I was replaced. And are you thinking of me when you fuck her?
Very. I mean, like, there's violence in there, Travis. There's a curse word.
That was a less aggressive version of that song by Ole Anis.
It was stripped down. Yeah, it made it sound. It's glorifying it, Travis. You know what I mean?
Feel like it.
But Travis, the question I have for you, can you kids bop that shit, Travis?
Kids bop that shit! Yeah, I guess. Fuckers. It has a snap on the case, though quickly it was misplaced. Please come searching with me with your truck, Bert.
So the man, his name is Bert?
The guy had a thing. It had a snap on the case, so he thought it was okay.
You think she's missing her purse or something?
And then he's looking for, he wants Bert to come help him look for it.
So is that Bert with a U or Bert with an E?
Huh. Oh, I mean, dealer's choice. Wait, I'm the dealer.
Well, Albert is Bert with an E, and Wilbert is Bert with a U. So.
What is Bertrude?
Bertrude? That's not a, that's a hybrid name. It's a hybrid name, Travis.
Mm.
Guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. We're going to pick up our guest. And we're going to be back. We're going to talk about the Scary Stories documentary. It's about the scary stories to tell in the dark, which Drunk didn't read because he doesn't like scary stuff, Travis.
You don't like to be scared.
Not a big fan.
You like the comedy?
Which makes it a little trouble in our relationship because my lady, she loves everything scary.
She likes the
horror. Shit. Me and your lady should have watch parties.
She wants to watch Saw like all the time. I'm like, nah. Go ahead and watch Saw. I'm going to go watch some sports.
Ryan, let's turn on some Saw.
Yeah, and I'm like, nah.
Strangely, we like all the same pop culture bullshit that you like.
You hear that, Steve Perry? We're bloody legends. Why are you talking like that, Neil Schoen? We're from San Francisco.
You know the songs. Now witness the PG-13 digestible tale of how they happen.
Steve's not getting his hip surgery. We gotta get out there and play. You got any ideas?
Well, I, Jonathan Kane, keyboardist of Journey, did see an impressive Filipino kid on YouTube.
Don't stop!
Faithfully, the story of Journey. Coming soon.
WFOD! As it happened, there is a man here who was wearing a brown suit, and his widow felt that blue would be better. He is about your husband's size, so we gave him the blue one and gave your husband the brown one.
Even so, she said, changing all that clothing was a big job.
Not really, said the undertaker. All we did was exchange their heads.
Here is Mike with a quick update on the WFOD Hollywood Fantasy League.
Detective Pikachu finished with 50 points, pairing a $94 million run with bad for a movie but good for a video game movie, 53% Metacritic. It's all a formality at this point, as the order everyone's going to finish in is already determined. John Wick 3 did great. It made $57 million this weekend. But for Zombie Cast to catch second place, Godzilla would need to put up Titanic numbers next weekend. First weekend results for Aladdin and Brightburn next week, and the next draft, so stay tuned.
The pinnacle of beauty and sensuality. Once again, WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
As a hearse goes by, for you may be the next to die. They wrap you up in bloody sheets to drop you 6 feet underneath. They put you in a pine wood box and cover you up with dirt and rocks. It all goes well for about a week, and then your coffin begins to leak, and the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms play pinochle on your snout. They eat your eyes, they eat your nose, as you begin to decompose. A slimy beetle with demon's eyes chews through your stomach and out your sides. Your stomach turns to rancid grease, and pus pours out like melted cheese. You spread it on a slice of bread, and that's what you'll eat when you're dead. And the worms crawl out, the worms crawl in, the worms that crawl in are lean and thin. The ones that crawl out are fat and stout. Your eyes fall in and your head.
Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is a documentary filmmaker. His new movie, Scary Stories, is available now on video on demand. Cody Merrick is on the program. Cody, how you doing?
All right. Hold on just a second. Let me make sure. I always got to check and make sure it's using the right microphone, because I actually have a decent microphone. I just got to make sure Skype is using the correct one.
Oh, I'm way familiar with that.
I was about to say, we know exactly what you're talking about.
I think I was using my external computer speaker for what, Mike, a year and a half?
Yeah, you went and bought a fancy mic and a board, and you were still talking through your laptop.
Yeah, just picking up the ambient sounds all over the
like
place.
A goof.
Okay, so do I sound better now?
Cody, you sound pretty good. You sound great.
Okay, cool. So are you in St. Louis?
We are, yeah.
Okay, I'm kind of from St. Louis.
Kind of from?
Well, my wife is from St. Louis, and I moved there and was there for, oh gosh, maybe 10 years, something like that. And I'm from Missouri. I'm just from Southwest Missouri, but down by Springfield.
Oh.
And so moved there after I graduated from Mizzou. And moved to St. Louis, and then my wife grew up there and stuff. So we're pretty much St. Louis people.
You hear that, drunk? A St. Louis guy makes good, right?
Yeah, well, let's go Blues.
Sure.
Cody, we watched your documentary. It was great. We enjoyed it a lot. It's available now on video on demand. Guys, if you liked those books when you were a kid, you should check this out. It's a good watch. I'd say even if you didn't like the books, check it out anyway, because it's interesting. I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know that it was a challenge, but I guess it makes sense when I mean.
One of the early ideas behind this documentary had to do with there being a certain mystique about it. Like, so many people remember these books, but they didn't really know that much about them. They just kind of remember. And in fact, a lot of people loved the books, didn't realize millions of other kids loved the books just as much as they did. So
right.
it had a certain mystique around it, but again, not a lot of answers, not a lot of actually knowing too much about both the books and kind of the challenges and the debate over whether they're appropriate and that sort of thing.
I remember very vividly, like I don't know how old I was, if I was in third grade or whatever, but I remember this book just magically appeared in the school library. Like it just popped up. It was a brand new Scholastic or whatever branded book it was. And it started making the rounds and being blown away by the fact that this was available to us as elementary school kids and was, you know, marketed towards children and ended up being in like this Scholastic book fair and things where, you know, you'd go to the library and as the subsequent volumes came out, you couldn't check them out. Like, because if they kids constantly had them in a rotation and you had to put your name on a list to get them to where you finally just had to suck it up and like purchase the book. Like I still have my copy of the third volume of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, because it finally got to the point where, you know, you just couldn't get that third volume. It never made its way back to the library. So you had to purchase it and you didn't know where these books came from.
And it grew out of almost like, you know, the author passed away shortly after the third book. And certainly he did a certain amount of press when he was around, but generally they grew over time as like a, you know, people think of, you know, movies and books having a cult following. This was kind of its own, a children's version of a cult following where like everyone was talking about it and passing it around, but you know, it wasn't something that had a spokesperson who was going around promoting it per se. It became a phenomenon because of the kids and their natural interest, and it grew. I mean, these books were published between 1981 and 1991, and they're often thought of as 90s books, partially because it took some time and it grew and it built and so really in the 90s is when it became this just huge, title that everyone, oh yes, of course I know about those books. Everyone read those books, that sort of thing. But I interviewed R.L. Stine for this. Of course, R.L. Stine's been interviewed a million times and, you know, there's not that much mystique around him because he's a lovely person and he was a great interview, but at the same time, you know, he's given a million interviews, so there's nothing new to know with these books, you know, this kind of built up, pent up, you know, interest. And so that was a good opportunity for a documentary.
When I was a kid, I had no idea what R.L. Stine looked like. I think I found out what R.L. Stine looked like 5 years ago. Like I read every Goosebumps, every Fear Street book for a good period of my childhood. And I never saw that guy. And maybe I was just sheltered because I didn't know about the controversy of you saying that there wasn't a whole lot. He didn't do a lot of marketing because, you know, he died shortly after the third book. I imagine the controversy probably sold some books as well.
No, absolutely. Well, and it also created more interest from kids, right? I mean, oh, that's sure. kind of natural. A kid hears that you're not supposed to have something well, right, and now yeah. I want it even more, you know? So it definitely added something to it that, you know, this was the cool book to have because some parents think you're not supposed to have it. And so it ends up being kind of counterintuitive.
So what's your in on the books, Cody? Like, what was it that made this something that you wanted to do? I think I read somewhere that this movie took you 5 years to make. Like, yes. What was your passion for this source material?
So early on, yes, you're right, about 5 years, not, you know, fits and starts and so on and so forth, but generally speaking, it has been 5 years, yes. Early on, it really started with, you know, my background is media related to children and children's books and that sort of thing. So, and also I just had an interest in it. I had an interest in, at the root of it, a documentary, a story that has to do with children's literacy and getting kids reading. But of course, you want some kind of avenue to explore that, right? You want, you know, a example that, you know, proves your point or proves your case, that sort of thing. And so I thought of these books, and I saw the story there. You know, I mean, you had a book series that I knew was wildly popular. I remember them. I'm one of those. I was in my 20s just kind of remembering that, oh, yeah, of course. And when the third book came out in 1991, I was 11 years old. So I guarantee you, I got in Scholastic Book Order around when I was 11 years old. And so I had that memory, but also I could see that so many other people had that memory of these books. And you know, it had created a certain legacy, but then I saw the story there because on top of that, it was the most banned or challenged book of the 1990s and generally one of the most challenged books of the last 40 years. So you juxtapose those together, and I just could see the documentary kind of writing. I mean, I didn't know everything that was going to go into it, but I said that's a fantastic starting point. Yeah. You know, is you know, the juxtaposition of how wildly popular they are, as well as, you know, how much they were challenged. And so, but at the root of it was also this message about, okay, you know, these books got kids reading. Yes, you know, you can have a debate as far as age appropriateness and things like that, and that's, there's some, I always say there's some nuance there. I mean, right, as much as it's easy to say, I don't believe in banning books, if you talk about, okay, but at some point we have to talk about, I'm not an advocate for all books to be available to all kids everywhere, so on and so forth. So,
they were borderline, but they did promote like a curiosity. They opened the door to kids wanting to see something that maybe they didn't know much about.
Well, and over again, you hear people say, these were the books that got me reading.
Right.
And the fun thing about a documentary like this is, okay, this isn't the most modern example of censorship. There are other titles on the list nowadays. But the benefit here is this book was very popular in the 80s and 90s and very censored in the 80s and 90s. Now we get to talk to all those people who grew up on these books that are now my age, that are in their, you know, 30s and 40s. And my joke is usually most of them didn't turn out to be suicidal maniacs, right? I mean, they didn't actually act out the stories that they read about. You know, they've gone on and to be musicians and artists and writers and all kinds of other things.
Well, and so, I feel you touched on it in the documentary too, you know, how these stories maybe touch on some unsavory things or telling more fundamental stories within these little snippets of horror that maybe, you know, they're not being exposed to by parents or things that they would have to learn on their own later in life. Where like I was raised on this stuff. Like I'm the same age as you. So I would have been 11 in 1991 as well. And I was raised on horror. Like these books were right up my alley because I had watched, you know, there's probably movies that I watched a little bit too early, like a lot of 80s kids. And I tried to expose my children to some of these things too. So it's not so shocking, I'd say, as they get older. So they're more, not desensitized necessarily, but they realize some of these things, you know, in their childhood and can figure out ways to deal with it as they grow into adulthood.
That said, and I totally agree with that. That said, I mean, different kids are different. Different parents are different. I mean, my example is I've got an 8-year-old. He's about to be 9 years old, and he does not deal with scary stuff. Like he's like, nope. He just like, we tried at least a little bit of the Goosebumps movie, and he noped right out of there. He's like, no, I'm not really early on, and that's fine. You know, I don't press him on it. You know, I challenge him a little bit with slightly scary things, but at the same time, I'm not saying you need to read this book. I'm not insisting upon it. It's like it's a kid by case basis. While I was, by the time I was his age, yes, I was watching the scariest of scary movies. And I was, I was definitely reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and Goosebumps. And by middle school, I was on to, you know, Stephen King and stuff like that. And that's not him. And that's fine, you know. So you've got all these different examples, you know.
Well, I definitely. And I see that just in my two children. I have a 10-year-old daughter and I have a 7-year-old son. And obviously, I'm not exposing my 7-year-old son to anything, you know, too toxic for his little brain. But there are some things that I'm exposing him to. It's like to see, you know, and like you said, obviously, you know, if your kid is reacting negatively, that that's maybe not necessarily something you want to continue to show them. But he enjoys it. Like, he really likes some of the scarier stuff. You know, he actually got a couple of Five Nights at Freddy's books. From the book fair, which I am reading with him to make sure that they're not too crazy, right? But my daughter has no interest in these things. She's not into scary stuff. She doesn't want it. She freaks out. But I completely agree on a kid by kid basis. But it seems like maybe back in our generation, it seemed like, you know, kids were maybe more apt to be able to deal with these things. And I don't know if that's a generational thing or if it's a societal thing or what.
I mean, I've heard people say that. I'm not totally convinced of that, which is to say, I don't know. I seriously just got away from, I'm a den leader of his Cub Scouts. So I've got, you know, eight, nine-year-old boys that I have almost on a weekly basis. And one of them talks about Pennywise and knows who Pennywise is and talks about him and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. No, I don't, especially, and nowadays they have the internet, which is, that is scary. I mean, there's goods and bads to it, right? But they have everything at their fingertips, and that scares parents, but at the same time, I don't know, there's also a certain amount of benefits. I'm not one of those that feels too strongly that, I don't know, the next generation can't handle things as well as we do. I think that sometimes gets sensationalized, you know, or it's a reactionary thing to seeing some kids versus I see kids all the time that, you know, are handling things just fine. And I regularly see, you know, just because I'm very active in social media. And so everyone's always reaching out to me regarding Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And on a daily basis, I see parents reading these books next to their 7-year-olds, and their 7-year-olds love it and have a big smile on their face and that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's hard to generalize because I just, for me personally, I see a lot of examples of a lot of kids of a younger generation still, you know, being, I guess I would say kids are naturally interested in horror. And that's a little bit the point of my documentary, is that I think that's natural and I don't think that's new. And you get into the historical stuff, you know, and you find that kids who were liked scary, hearing scary stories and telling scary stories since the beginning of time, since we came up with the whole idea of stories around a campfire, you know,
because it's all essentially folklore.
Exactly. I mean, these stories, yes, we're talking about a particular collection that happened in the 80s and 90s, but they're not new stories. And this kind of sets these books apart from a lot of other books that they get lumped into, which I get that it's natural that you're lumping them into with Goosebumps and Scary Stories for Sleepovers and a number of series that came out around that same time. But these were different because they were a little more, you know, I say they're the modern day Grimm's fairy tales, right? Because they're not totally original. They're actually imparting part of our history to some degree. Yes, yes, it's folklore. It's you know, and there was thick source material at the end of the books that kind of went into, you know, these really interesting source materials of these stories and where do they come from and different variations of it. I mean, you know, one of the stories that people reference the most is Harold, which is this, you know, scarecrow who comes to life basically and, you know, does some not so nice things. But of course, in the source material, it's making comparisons to Frankenstein. It's making a comparison to the Golem of Jewish tradition. It's making these connections and saying, okay, I know you just had a thrill with this scary story, and that's great for kids that are interested. This has underpinnings to all kinds of other traditional stories and stories that we've been imparting to our kids for a long time.
The documentary, it had a lot of stuff that got me. The father-son stuff got me. I don't want to ruin too much, but the ending, the conversation at the end, really, it just kind of shows you that, you know, you just got to keep having conversations, and you can't just block people out and say,
yeah,
I disagree with you forever. It was great, Cody. You did a great job.
Thank you. I mean, one of the weird, and this kind of happened along the way, or even some of it I've thought about since I edited it together, was this, you know, yes, the ending became kind of this conversation between, you know, the father of Alvin Schwartz, Peter Schwartz, or I'm sorry, the son of Alvin Schwartz, Peter Schwartz, and this, you know, ex-PTA mother who wanted to have the books removed. And it was a...
Still seemed, you know, to be holding a grudge 25 years later. Still pissed off about
yes,
it.
Yes, but it became a civil conversation because it was still on different sides of the argument here. And it became a civil conversation. And it was kind of juxtaposed to another part of the documentary where we talk about, okay, here's what happens a lot of times at school board meetings, because this is usually what it results is, okay, I don't want this book in the school, so I'm going to take it to school board meeting, and it's going to escalate and escalate, and it's going to turn into a school board meeting where people are screaming and yelling and are very passionate about it, and it's not particularly conducive to the debate on, and usually the loudest voice wins to some degree, or certainly that can be the case.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
I'm sorry?
The squeaky wheel, it gets the grease.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And so not to say anything was solved with this, but I mean, the message I kind of like that kind of came along the way is it's possible that, you know, to have a civil conversation, it's tricky, it's not easy, and there's some nuance to it. That said, for a majority of this documentary, I admit, it's a fairly good celebration of these books because I knew that's what people wanted to see, and also there's just a lot of interesting things having to do with these books, so there's a lot to dig into there. But then also it kind of starts to question, okay, if this book is often removed, oftentimes very quietly from bookshelves, and it has had a positive effect for a lot of people, maybe we need to start thinking about, you know, how we go about it, right? How we go about talking about it and how we go about, you know, debating whether to remove books from library bookshelves.
Who did the art animation for the interstitials between like the interviews and the chats in the movie?
His name is Shane Hunt. And he's great. I mean, he just did a fantastic job. I mean, the tricky part is kind of, you know, being able to use Stephen Gamble, the original illustrator's style, and mixing that with animation. And he'd never done that specifically. He could do the style, and he did animation separately. So it was an interesting experience kind of melding like both the style and the animation together. And yeah, I think.
Yeah. He really did a great job of emulating Gamble, and did it really add like a creepiness factor to it, because there is something about that art that really kind of captures and like kind of touches on those like horrific elements. And I thought that the animation, like, while, you know, it still had like kind of like a childlike wonder, it really did kind of add like a total creepiness factor to the story that you were telling. You did a hell of a job.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, again, it's, I'm talking about it now as if, you know, but it's happened over a number of years, and it's definitely been a learning experience as well as just a really great experience just to kind of figure out how to best serve the story. Yeah.
Cody, are you working on anything else? You got something else you're cooking up or taking a break?
Yeah. Nothing far enough along. Definitely.
Can't talk about it yet.
The general plan is to move over to a narrative film. But I generally this summer, I'm trying to nudge that along far enough to talk about it further.
Guys, Cody's movie, it's a Scary Stories. It's a documentary on the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books. Go to scarystoriesdoc.com to check out all the, I'm sure there's links to places you can buy it or rent it at scarystoriesdoc on Twitter. Cody, thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it. It was fun. Let's do it again next time something comes out.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Cody.
I like Cody. I like Cody. He seems like a nice guy. He's passionate about his craft. You know what I'm saying, Travis?
I like Cody. I like his movie. I'm sincerely really, really enjoyed this movie. And if anybody even has like a slight remembrance of those books, or if they're diehard, like it really recaptured something in me. I watched it with like a sense of wonder, because it was nostalgic, but it wasn't just nostalgia. It like touched a part of me, right? Like this is a huge part of my childhood. And if you're similar to me and you remember these things and you remember these tattered copies of these Scary Stories books in your school library, this documentary is absolutely for you. It was really good.
And Travis, I'll tell you what, my pick of the week, Travis, I'll jump right in with my pick of the week, 'cause it's related. The musician that, had the song at the beginning that he was interviewed in the documentary. His name is Harley Poe.
Oh yeah,
I've taken a deep dive on Harley Poe, Travis.
Good stuff.
You'd like Harley Poe, Travis. He's every one of his songs is kind of got a macabre skew to it. I would say it sounds like if the guy from Placebo tried to make Tom Waits music. So yeah, Harley Poe is my pick of the week.
That's quite the explanation of what his music sounds like. I got it right away.
Yeah, it's all really weird, Travis. It's weird stuff. Like he has a song called Transvestites Can Be Cannibals Too. He's got a bunch of weird ones like that.
We got to talk to that guy next.
We'll get Harley Poe on the show. I didn't play Harley Poe on the show this week, Travis, just because he's in that documentary and I was afraid Cody'd tell on me.
Oh,
Travis, you got a pick of the week? Something you want the people to know about, Travis?
Yeah, Travis's pick of the week is fairly obvious. Everybody already knows about it, but I don't care. Travis's pick of the week is John Wick 3, Parabellum. Went and saw that baby on Sunday and was very, very, very happy with the viewing experience. John Wick.
Haven't seen the John Wick 3 yet, Travis. I'm looking forward to
it. There.
And you can tell people to watch somebody that's a movie that's not ours, because we have quite the lead. Yeah. So.
We ain't losing, guys.
Watch John Wick. He has the dude kills a guy with a book. Like, he kills a guy with a horse. Buck. He kills a guy with a horse. He killed, kills him with a book.
He kills three men with a pencil. Those movies are great. They already announced John Wick 4, Travis.
Yeah. I'll watch it.
Make a million John Wicks. Keep making them. They're
my favorite
great.
Thing about every new John Wick release is that you can go on YouTube and see Keanu Reeves training at the gun range for the new John Wick movie. Well, it's just as exciting as watching.
It's funny too,
because
right
John
before
Wick
that
movie.
First movie came out, everybody's like, who's gonna watch this piece of crap?
I got
and then once it came out, everybody's like, oh, drunk, John Wick's holy
when,
shit.
When,
actually pretty good.
When John Wick 1 came out, I got a screening invitation to see it like a week early.
And you're just, and like, we're just like, nah.
It's a Keanu Reeves action movie. Let's just go. And we went in with no expectations. Probably the most fun I've ever had in a movie in my life. Because I went in there thinking, this is going to be some dumb Keanu Reeves action movie. Who gives a shit? And that movie was fucking great. That's the only problem with John Wick's 2 and 3 and 4 is like you go in there with John Wick expectations. Yeah. Like I went into John Wick 1 with nothing.
Zero. Yeah, we did the same thing. My wife and I were out of town, and we had like a, I think we went to like a comedy show on Friday or something.
Because I don't think anything else was
playing
against it, John Wick 1. So you're just like, fuck it. That's the only thing playing.
That's what it was. It was like, well, what do you want to see? It's like, well, this movie's 3 hours. Well, fuck it. John Wick is like an hour and 45. Let's go see that. And my wife doesn't like action flicks. And she was like on the edge of her seat. Like, she walked out of that theater like energized, because I remember, you know, the first time that the bad guy in part one is all like, oh shit, because they killed John Wick's dog and stole his car.
I'll tell you
and
what,
the
you
whole
know, that
theater was like, oh no.
Travis, that Keanu Reeves, I think that we can all acknowledge that he's not really a very good actor, but you just fucking root for him.
Yeah.
I want Keanu Reeves to be in movies and do good, and I don't know why that is. Because he's not great, but he's great.
In
everything he's in.
The evolution is kind of funny too, because he goes from Bill and Ted to Neo to, you know, John
Yeah,
Wick.
I mean, like, if you really think about it, he's been in some fucking good shit. He was in fucking Point Break drunk.
Point Break is one of the best movies
ever. And then my younger sister's favorite, The Replacements.
I love The Replacements.
Hell of a sports movie.
Johnny Mnemonic. Yeah. Johnny Mnemonic's fucking great. I'll tell you what.
Super fun.
Constantine.
I love Constantine.
Yeah. Like, I haven't watched it recently, but I remember enjoying it.
It holds up. I watched it in the last handful.
And like when people didn't, and Travis, we didn't even mention Speed, Travis.
He's been in some gems for sure.
Travis, Speed's incredible.
There's an interview that they did with the cast and crew of John Wick 3, and they ask they're asking Keanu Reeves questions to people, and they're saying, "Oh, how many they ask Keanu, they're like, "How many IMDb credits do you think you have?" And then they ask all of his castmates, you know, and they're like, "Oh, that's probably a lot, like 60, 70. I don't know." And they ask Keanu, and he's like, like 112. And he was close, because he's got 98 IMDb credits. He's made 98 movies.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is like, even if he's in a bad movie, he's usually the best part. And that's weird, because he's not a good actor.
Right. If he's in a bad movie, he's hilarious
for no reason. Overly good looking. I have no idea why we continue to root for Keanu Reeves, Travis.
I don't know.
But, I think he's awesome. I will myself, continue. But...
Right. So will I. Drunk pick of the week, Drunk.
Drunk's pick of the week would be Heinz Craft Hybrids. Go out to your local grocers and pick some up.
Drunk, play Gloria. You're not drunk. We're playing Gloria.
Yeah, we have to.
Gotta play Gloria.
Gotta let it simmer on the way out.
You know what I'm saying? Guys, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Travis, we'll do it again next week, right? You think?
Yeah,
next
I think
week,
so.
We'll do another show.
Hopefully.
Yeah, why not?
Hopefully the next time I'm with you guys, the Blues are Stanley Cup champions.
Drunk's off the next 2 weeks, guys.
And it'll be great.
It's not going to be the same without you, buddy.
I appreciate that. Who knows? Maybe if I get some free time, I'll call the hotline.
Matt will probably be back next week, guys. We appreciate everything. Guys, check out Cody Merrick's documentary.
Good guy.
It's scarystoriesdoc.com. Travis, I wanted to...
Gloria!
God, it's a fucking good song, John.
It's a fucking bop.
This song fucking bops.
Bop. Gotta listen to it with headphones.
Oh. Travis, I wanted to thank... the Jim from the Couch Grouches and Dan from the Furnicast for helping us with our bit, Travis.
Thanks, guys.
Check out those shows, the Furnicast and the Couch Grouches. That's it, guys. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Guns out, fun's out.
Thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. If you enjoyed it, subscribe so you don't miss the next one. Leave a review, tell a friend. You can also listen live every Tuesday night on strangelabel.com. There's other programs on that network as well, all of which are worth checking out. You can interact with us via phone, 636-487-HAND, via email, Mike, Travis, Drunk, or Matt at WFODshow.com, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at WFO Dix. Special thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Val, Liquid Lozenge, and Brian Kranz. If you'd like to contribute, it's patreon.com/WFODix. You get about 20 minutes of bonus content for as little as $1 a month. Thanks again. Have a good one. We'll see you next week. Bye.
lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.
So there's this young teenage couple, and they go up to Lover's Lane because they're going to do some necking.
Right.
They get up to the Lover's Lane, and guys, he's feeling on some boob, you know, just getting a little boob. And it's getting all hot and heavy, and the windows are fogging up. And something news breaks onto the radio. They're like, hey, there's this guy that escaped from prison, and he's a bad hombre, you know what I'm saying? He's a bad dude, and you'll be able to recognize him because he's only got one hand, and his other hand, he's got like a hook hand, like a fucking pirate. So they're up there on Lover's Lane, and the gal starts getting wishy-washy. As gals sometimes do, guys. And she goes, you know, if there's a creepy maniac out on the loose, maybe you should just take me home. And the guy says, you're giving me the blue balls, gal. You're giving me the blue balls. She says, no. If this hook guy kills us both, my parents will kill me. So, reluctantly, guy backs out. Drives her ass home. And she gets out of the car, and she slams the door, and she starts screaming. And the guy's like, what the fuck? Comes around to her side of the car. And sure enough, guys, god damn it, sure enough, hanging from the doorknob of the door handle, cars don't have doorknobs, the door handle of the car, fucking hook, you guys. There's a fucking hook there. You get what I'm saying? The fucking guy, he was there. So don't go fucking your girlfriends in cars. You can take away anything from this. That's it, guys. Don't go fucking your girlfriend in cars.